Broadcasting from the Mono Wynn Casino Studios. This is Multicultural AM 1600 KGST Fresno.
This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of the Portuguese American Hour here on Multicultural 1600 AM. I'm Justice Neves. With me, as always, Denise Borges. Denise, how you doing?
I am doing well. And you are doing fantastically well, I hope.
Doing good. Doing good. We're here.
Staying safe.
doing healthy. What we can to stay safe. Healthy, of course.
Yes. Good. And we hope that all of our listeners are as well, safe and healthy. Because we want you here every single day for the Portuguese American Hour. We want you here also healthy and safe. And we have a full-packed program, Justice. We have two guests. We have some music. We have lots of information. And so we are wanting our guests to get on our conversation with us as soon as possible. So let's go directly to our music. Welcome, everyone. This is a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno, the Portuguese American Hour here on Multicultural Radio. 1600 AM KGST www.multicultural1600am.com. And we are going to our first song and then to our first guest. The song is by a group called Bell Aurora. They are musical invitees for this edition of the Portuguese American Hour, and the music is called Pezinho from the island of Pico. Miguel. And that was Pezinho, one of the all-time classics from the archipelago of the Azores. Here on the Portuguese American Hour, our musical invitees is an excellent group from the island of São Miguel, but sings music from all the different islands. This one was Pezinho do Pico, and the group is called Bella Aurora. Check it out on social media, check it out on YouTube, and check it out wherever you buy good music. Grupo de Música Popular e Tradicional dos Açores, Bella Aurora, are amongst the best that we have. We have our first guest on the line on this edition of the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno, here every day, Monday through Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on KGST, AM 1600 for the Valley. And of course, those of you who are not from the Valley can listen to us on any radio app, phone radio app, those who use their phone for everything, and also online at www.multicultural1600am.com. And just another reminder that our programs are all archived at our website, www.multicultural1600am.com, so you can listen to them at your own convenience as they are posted as podcasts. Our first guest, as I said, is a young man. Everyone is young to me nowadays. After I turn 60, everyone's young. And so he is lives in Northern California. He's originally from the beautiful island of Pico that we played the music just a few minutes ago. Is a kind of a Portuguese icon in the Portuguese American community. Everyone knows when I mention the name, those of you who are Portuguese background said, oh, I've heard of him. And he is Tony Goulart, who is lives in the Bay Area, who's been heavily involved in the Portuguese American community for, I would say, the last 3 to 4 decades at least. And we are honored and happy that he took some time from his day to be with us. Tony, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I'm happy to be part of your endeavor at Fresno State, and I want to congratulate you to start off by the excellent work that you and others have put together and made an effort so that it would come to fruition.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Tony, let's talk a little bit. As I mentioned, lots of people know your name. Lots of people know who you are. If you don't mind taking about 3 minutes and telling us a little bit, I know that you came from Pico and your trajectory. I mean, Pico to California, correct?
Well, Pico with a short visit to San Miguel for 5 years and Terceira for 4, attending the local seminary. And then at the age of 20, I immigrated to California in 1974. And about 4 years later, I started with a brother of mine, my brother Joe. We started the construction company. And in the meanwhile, I always wanted to get back to school. I got my undergraduate degree and my master's degree at the University of San Francisco. And on the side, to fulfill the spare moments that I had, I also got involved with the Portuguese community. I am elated that you said that I was a young man, and then you mentioned that I have been involved with the Portuguese community for 3 or 4 decades. So that tells you a little bit of how young I am.
Yeah, but I also said once I turn 60, everybody's young.
Well, I've surpassed that mark a few years ago. But we're still here, alive and kicking, and working for the betterment of our community and pitching in the best we can to make this a better place for all of us to live in.
Indeed. And one of the organizations, a multitude of organizations that you've been involved in, but one of the organizations that I ask you to be part of the show, and again I thank you, is the Portuguese Heritage Publication of California. Our community has changed immensely in the last 3 or 4 decades that you and I both have been involved in, maybe a little bit too much for both of our own health, but the community has changed, but and we've been talking about this for that length of time as well. The one of the issues, of course, and that's what we're trying to do in a different level, obviously, at the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute here at Fresno State, is to kind of register who we are as a community. And Portuguese Heritage Publications of California has been doing that more than any other entity here in the States. Tell me a little bit how this publishing house, how it came about.
Well, I usually like to start by saying that most of our organizations spring up from discontent or from some sort of infight within another organization. If you remember, about 20-some-odd years ago, there was an organization established in Santa Clara Valley called Portuguese Chamber of Commerce.
Correct.
Some people understood what the intention of that organization was, and it was at the same time that the whole community was turning its interests into the civic, into a more active civic participation. There were several other organizations that were either established right after or around that time, as PALCAS, as the Portuguese Community Council for the Empresarios in Portugal. So there was a whole array of organizations that tried to take advantage of our somewhat unrecognized economical potential to just show our faces to the community at large. Mm-hmm. And that was the intention of the Portuguese Heritage Publications. I mean, the Portuguese Chamber of Commerce of Silicon Valley. At one point in time, there was this probably crazy idea of expanding it to the entire state. And one of the things that we thought of doing was on the 10th anniversary of the Portuguese Chamber to do some kind of an inventory of organizations throughout the state that would that the communities could connect to and that would somehow identify with. And so we thought of doing a little summary of all the Holy Ghost organizations and the celebrations that had taken place in California for over 100 years. And that brought about, on the 10th anniversary of the Chamber, the publishing of the Portuguese Festus book. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a tremendous success. It was such a success, but at the same time, it was such a big undertaking, because it was a very large book, very expensive to print. It was printed overseas, but we had to rely on outside sources both to design the book and to print it. So we thought that we could not pitch in too much into the finances of the Portuguese Chamber of Commerce, because they really did not exist. And we launched a fundraising effort for the publication of this book, which was tremendously successful. We had estimated that the book was going to cost somewhere around $55,000, and that would pay for all the expenses of the book, and then we would send it out to the public libraries, to universities and colleges where Portuguese was taught, and that we would have just this beautiful publication. Well, it so happened that it was quite successful. The first edition sold out in just a matter of a few months. And a few months later, we had to ask for a reprint. We sold and distributed about 6,500 copies of this book. And so everything was fine and dandy. And all the accounting was done under the Portuguese Chamber of Commerce. When funds ran out for that organization, they wanted to appropriate, and I wasn't directly involved, but I was still on the advisory board. Mm-hmm. They wanted to appropriate that money that had been raised little by little throughout the community to defray the costs of printing the book to run the Chamber of Commerce, and I strongly opposed. And a lot of other people that knew from the very beginning that all the fundraising had been done for the book and not for the chamber opposed to that idea. Well, that created some animosity, and a few months later, we came to an agreement of splitting some of the profits from the sale of the book, and we started Portuguese Heritage Publications with a mission of researching, preserving, and disseminating for educational purposes the memories and the relevant events about the Portuguese presence in California. That's how our mission statement reads these mm-hmm. days. And so we started publishing books. Mm-hmm. When we were doing the research on the Holy Ghost book, we came across something that I had never seen before, or I came across Al Graves' master's work mm-hmm. and PhD dissertation about the Portuguese in agriculture. And that was the launching pad for our second project. We had the financing assured with the proceeds from the previous book. So I met with Al Graves, Dr. Al Graves from Fresno, who at the time I thought he was somewhat connected to the Portuguese community besides being married to a Portuguese. I thought his name had been changed from Graves to Graves, but he didn't have anything to do with us. He was a Texan that somehow found his way to the Portuguese community at 18 years of age by moving into the Central Valley. And he was amicable and kind enough to take 10 months out of his banking job to reformat and update the book, The Portuguese Immigrants in Agriculture, which was just another smashing success mm-hmm. with over 4,500 copies sold. So that's basically how we started. And one book subsidized the next, and we kept on going. And our third venture was with the Pioneers, was regarding the Pioneers with the Portuguese Shore Whalers of California, and research of 15 years done by David Bertel mm-hmm. from Campbell, California, who had been trying for a number of years to find a publishing company that would embrace his research. And he had never found anybody that was very interested in publishing about 100-year-old dead whales and dead Portuguese. So here came our third book, which was not as successful as the previous two, but it registered an important part of our history, of our pioneers, mm-hmm. especially at a time when all of the majority of them were illiterate. Mm-hmm. There was very little writing and very little research that we could do about them. He did a tremendous in-depth research on the families, on the genealogy of all these people, connected them to the islands where they came from, and so it is an abundance mm-hmm. of information that book contains.
And we are conversing with Tony Goulart with the Portuguese Heritage Publication of California. Fascinating story. I know that our listeners are enjoying it tremendously as I am. Tony, if you'll be kind enough to hang on for just a minute or so, we have to take a very quick break, but we'll continue this conversation. This is the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. We'll be right back with our second segment as we continue our conversation with Tony Goulart.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And we are back with the second segment of this edition of the Portuguese American Hour. We are here every day with you, Monday through Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. We are a product of the recently created, just a year ago, the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at Fresno State. And our conversation for this edition of the Portuguese American Hour is with Tony Goulart. We talked a bit about the origins of the Portuguese Heritage Publication, about some of the first publications. Tony, the Portuguese Heritage Publications of California now has actually several different collections. Can you talk a little bit about some of these collections and what they try to accomplish?
Yes. So we have, and basically I've been talking about the Heritage Collection, which is made up of several books that were done by research effort, local research effort. We have a book about the Holy Ghost Festas, one about the Portuguese immigrants in agriculture, the shore whalers, which are referred to as the pioneer immigration book of especially the Azoreans to California, mm-hmm. even though they were not absolutely only Azoreans, there were also Cape Verdeans. And then we have another collection, which is called the Fiction Collection. That Fiction Collection contains or is made up of books, of short stories, fictional work mm-hmm. that relate directly or indirectly to the experience of the Portuguese in California. Some of the titles on this collection are A Call for the Holy Spirit, An Immigrant's Journey by Rose Silva King, and I No Longer Like Chocolates, which you so kindly translated with Catherine Baker, masterpiece of Alamo Oliveira. And we have a pioneer collection, which is made up of books of people that wrote their histories and their remembrances of their families. One is called The Barrel Full of Memories by Pauline Stonehill, An Egg in the Water Glass by Olivia Lodge, Footprints in the Soil by Rose Emery Peters, and a translation also by you and Catherine Baker of our dear Eduardo Mayon Diaz's Portuguese Presence in California. So we have several venues. We have a collection that features books in Portuguese. One of them is Beijo da Abelha by Maria das Dores Beirão, My California Friends by Vasco Pereira da Costa, which is a bilingual edition. O Cântico do Silêncio de José Luís da Silva. Perspectivas from Dr. Fernando Silva, and several books from Machado Ribeiro, the Décio Oliveira's
right pseudonym, kind of, yeah,
writing
yeah.
Name. And so we have several of these collections that try to portray some aspect, whether in poetry or in romance, or in fiction, some of the aspects of the living of the Portuguese presence in California. It has been a fun experience, but like with everything else, this organization, as many others, sits on the shoulders of a small group of leaders that devoted many years of their energy. Portuguese Heritage Publications was established in the year 2001, and some of those people have passed away. Some of the most dedicated ones that went to the festers and sold books and passed them out one by one. So our energy in the last 2-3 years, I would say, has decreased. But also we have an issue that we have covered some of the main topics of the Portuguese presence in California, and we have scarcity of works to publish. We have encouraged in several manners for people to bring us their research in order to be evaluated for publication, but it is not easy to find those volunteers that will probably basically just give us their manuscripts at the exchange of a small token of appreciation for us to publish. So our activity has diminished considerably in the last 3-4 years. But we're not dead. We're still alive. And we are working on the publication of, or the research of the Portuguese bands in California, Portuguese marching bands. We have a collection of photos and stories going back to the end of the 19th century, so the late 1800s, and hopefully within 2020. Or by the end of the year, we'll be able to put out this research. We also met recently with Alvin Graves about the possibility of researching the tuna fishing industry from a Portuguese perspective in San Diego. And that would be a tremendous asset to have in our collection. And it would kind of also complete one of the main activities, economic activities, that made so many Portuguese American prosper, and all the way from the 1920s to the 1970s, in particularly in the San Diego area.
Correct. You also have a couple of books, like I think The Power of the Spirit, which was also, correct me if I'm wrong, that was Portuguese Heritage Publication as well, correct?
Correct. Yeah, Power of the Spirit, The History of the IES Hall in San Jose, Miguel Habla, which was researched by Maria Cunha Cardi, and The History of the Five Wounds Church, authored by Miguel Habla. So there's a variety of topics that we have covered, not to say some that are more of the local interest, like the history of the 50 years of the Portuguese Athletic Club in San Jose, and a few others.
Sure.
I would encourage your listening audience to look into our webpage called Portuguese Books. .org for the complete information on all the publications that we've been able to put out, our catalog, our sales, and I would like to remind some of the books that we have in inventory are at bargain prices. You can purchase the Shore Whalers that at one time sold for $45. You can buy it today, I believe, for $15 or $20. It's not that we are desperate, but we would like to put these books in people's hands.
Sure.
I recall, and you probably recall also, when the last wave of immigration arrived here from the Azores, most of the first waivers and integrated, and their descendants had integrated in the mainstream society. But we had a few immigrants that had come in the late 50s and 60s and the early 70s that didn't have a book in their homes except for the Yellow Pages.
Right, that's
and,
true.
And it would be nice to have on a coffee table one of our luxury editions of the Portuguese Heritage Publications books. Mm-hmm. I think it would be, it's not the type of book that you read on one breath, but from time to time, it's interesting to just browse through, look at the pictures, because they are very profusely illustrated. You won't get bored, and you will find something that you did not know before.
One of the last books that was published was it's one of my favorites to read. I've read it. I've read it at bits and pieces. I've read it all, actually, but you know, throughout the last few months more, as I was doing some research for some things that I wanted to do myself, which is not talked about, but I think it's a great book. It's Untamed Dreams that that José Rodrigues and Francisco Diniz edited. I think there's lots of interesting stories there.
Yeah, and I
love a lot of the stories on it.
Yeah, and that book is, if you visit PortugueseBooks.org, you will see it right on the first, on the top of the page, Untamed Dreams, Faces of America. And that was another effort that I think it was so valuable, because we have 56 writers, not professional writers, amateur writers, that write about important figures of the Portuguese community throughout the state. We wish there would have been more, but that was also intended to be the first of many volumes of people that distinguished themselves. And when I say distinguished themselves or they were successful, I'm not talking about the financial success. I'm talking about people that raised their children with basic principles that we all love and appreciate. People that put their kids through school, that lived very regular, everyday lives, mm-hmm. that were not on the forefront of the newspapers, of the local newspapers or Portuguese newspapers. They didn't make the headlines, but they are so full of interesting stories, mm-hmm. of people that were just amazing.
Indeed. I think it's a fascinating book. I think Untamed Dreams, Faces of America should be read by all of the Portuguese Americans, as all the other books as well. I actually, it is one of my things that we'd love to get started here at Fresno State in the near future, especially as we have two Portuguese minors that we're working on, and that is an ethnic studies course. And I think of the Portuguese American experience in California, I think that Untamed Dreams should be part of reading material for that course. We only have about 3 or 4 minutes left, Tony. So projects for the future. You spoke about the tuna industry with Al Graves. One quick question: what about some of these older publications that no longer exist? I mean, I'm talking about some of the things like Carlos Almeida did many years ago, which was kind of still is a reference book for a lot of the things that happened in California. Some of the things that were done by August Vaz, the Portuguese in California. Some of the things that were written, both whether it be in Portuguese or English, by Artur Avila, the old radio man, you know, that was one of the pioneers. Is there any thought about, you know, maybe republishing some of these things in one way or another?
Well, it's a very complex, and we only have 2 or 3 minutes left, but it's very complex. We approached the author of Land As Far As the Eye Can See.
Yeah.
Which is out of print. It has been out of print for at least 8-10 years.
Mm-hmm.
We asked them, begged them, to reprint that book because it's so invaluable, the information. It's so new, the information that it contains. Now it slipped.
Mm-hmm.
The author slipped my mind.
The author's name?
Yeah.
Donald Warren.
Donald Warren.
Yes.
And but because of his affiliation with the academic world, he would like a university press to reprint. And so we are at this impasse. We asked other authors permission to reprint some of the books that are no longer available. Like you mentioned, August Vaz, Carlos Almeida. We've pushed Carlos Almeida to the limit to even publish some of the material that that he has ready to be published. But he prefers to be published only after he passes. So we've knocked at some doors, but we've not been very successful. I understand that there are a multitude of reasons why people would rather be published by a university press than a community volunteer type publisher. But unfortunately, those are the things that we will probably miss in the future of not being able to have a wider distribution. But that's something to consider, and I'll keep that in mind and bring it up to
I understand that some people want to keep it at a university press, and of course there's many ways to go around that, but some things, you know, if they're not published at a particular time, they're not publishable. I mean, it's like I don't know, you know, the success that you had and Portuguese Heritage Publications had with the Holy Ghost Festus. I don't know if that same book could be published today. So some things can only be done at a particular time in history.
People still look for that book, and I understand. I have two copies, and I probably will not part with them for quite some time. But people have been looking for that book, but it's not enough to justify a reprint because it's a very expensive process.
Correct.
The same thing with Al Graves' book, The Portuguese Immigrants in Agriculture. We wish we would have another 500 copies.
Yeah,
but we don't. We're sold out, and all we have is a CD version, a PDF version, in case some researcher still wants to get a hold of the information contained in the book.
Correct.
So those are also the limitations of not having financial ability to to do a little bit more than what we had anticipated in the beginning, but also the energy.
That's right.
We're getting up there in our 60s and 70s, and some are in the 80s, some people in our board. So we try to refresh our board, bring some other people along, some younger blood. And I remember vividly being at one meeting, and I apologize if I'm running a little long with this, but a youngster turns to me and he says, "Mr. Goulart, our generation do not read books."
I think they do, though.
And that reflected just a segment of our community, community.
Sure.
They do read books.
Yeah.
But probably not at a level that would be an incentive for us within our own community to venture into very expensive publishing projects.
Correct. Well, Tony, thank you so much for spending the last 40 minutes with us. I appreciate it very much. I thank you for giving us this history. It's wonderful to get it registered as well. It's going to be archived, of course, as a podcast, and lots of these also at our library at the Portuguese Oral History that we're trying to collect, as you know. So, again, thank you so much. Thank you for all your work. Thank you for your vision.
Thank you for venting out and putting PortugueseBooks.org out there.
We will.
For your listening audience, and I wish everybody a safe and a healthy season that we're going to struggle through, but we will eventually come out of it.
I agree. And promise me that we'll come back and do this in a couple of months about maybe some other aspects of the community. Okay? Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Take care. Best of luck. Tony Goulart from the Portuguese Heritage Publication of California, always a fascinating person to talk to, www.portuguesebooks.org if you want more information, and we'll keep on talking to Tony and about some of their books here on the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. We'll be right back.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And we are back with our third and final segment of this edition of the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. And we have our second guest on the line from the Valley area. Remember that the Portuguese American Hour can be listened to on your regular AM radio if you are in the Fresno area, Fresno South, Fresno North as well, as at the 1600 AM. But you can also listen to us on any of the phone apps, radio phone apps, and also directly online, www.multicultural1600am.com. And all of our programs, as I mentioned earlier, are archived at that site, and you can listen to them as podcasts as well. We have our second guest on the line, as I said, and he is here from the Valley area, from the Hillmar area, a good friend of this program who has been our guest before here, and we play his music often, and that is the Portuguese-American singer and songwriter Alcides Machado. Alcides, good afternoon to you. How are you, my friend?
Good afternoon. Very well. Doing
staying well safe. Staying safe and healthy, I hope.
Yes, keeping safe and communicating with the people and catching up with them, making sure everybody's okay, checking up on them.
We wanted to talk to you. First of all, we'll talk to you about, as an artist, and wonderful deed that you and your brother and Emily did. But before that, I wanted to reach out to you, especially because of your good work being done with the Bom Samaritano Foundation, which we've also featured here on the Portuguese American Hour, reaching out to some of the most vulnerable people in our society. That's what you do. That is the amazing work that you're doing in that end of the valley and throughout the state. How are folks dealing? How are some of our most marginalized dealing with what's going on, sometimes not practicing some of the best practices when it comes to safety?
Well, everyone that I have been dealing with even in the past few years, everybody's pretty much cooperating and staying at home, which is good health-wise and staying away from a possibility of getting infected or anything. However, psychologically, an unoccupied mind is a dangerous place to be in. So especially the ones that are a little bit more vulnerable, mm-hmm. And more susceptible to relapsing, I encourage them to keep busy, to keep their minds busy, away from depression and away from possibilities of getting into panicking and negative thoughts. So for that too, I keep in touch with them and encourage them to keep in touch with me too, so that we can sort of change their channels and their thinking. And being able to cope with this, because being at home, especially for people who are used to traveling outside the house and working outside the house, when you're stuck in at home, you sort of tend to go a little bit in a negative thought pattern. But so far it's been okay. People have been calling me just simply to either vent or hear another voice saying, you know, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this together.
Correct. And one of the other reasons I wanted to outreach to you in this time, to the Bom Samaritano Foundation, is I know that your foundation, of course, lives on donations and some of the events that you've had, and you've had to cancel a couple of the events. And so how is that going to affect you financially, and how can people help?
Well, it's always devastating when these situations arise, because we are not government funded, although I have tried to reach out to counties and cities and et cetera. But unfortunately, it does take a lot more work to get funding, and although we have helped a lot of people. I'm going on close to 800 units so far, and we are in a month of March, and saying units, that means contacts that we've had for help or for information referral, etc. And yeah, we had to cancel a fish dinner that we were going to have actually April 11th. We had to cancel that, and we had a sweetbread sale that we had to cancel also. That affects us tremendously. I've been trying to reach out to our Portuguese committees, but it's hard. We're trying to inform the people and educate the people of what we do, and of course, slowly they are learning. Everybody's learning as they go, and as we serve more and more people, the word gets out. But again, this is still taboo. The fact of dealing with the community that has problems with drug and alcohol addiction. It's hard to talk about as far as people who don't really want to confront the reality of it. However, we do have other services going on which brings people to the office, meaning immigration, retirement, Social Security, other paperwork that we help them with. And that brings them to the office, and they feel free to come in, not thinking that they're just coming here for because of an addiction or something like that. They come in for whatever. I just translated some paperwork that had to be translated for this lawyer and stuff like that. So as we offer more services, people realize that we are, in general, an organization that helps the community with different issues. It doesn't have to be drug and alcohol. So slowly but surely, we're letting the community know what we're all about, and hopefully they'll understand and cooperate, especially these FESTA committees, who are suffering now, too. I mean, they cannot rent their halls now.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And and let me ask you, so you've had to cancel some of the events. I know that you had the Fridage event the same way. Are you thinking about maybe doing some other events where people just kind of a takeout thing, you know, instead of, you know, in where there's gatherings? Is that something that you might consider to help to sustain it financially, obviously?
Definitely. As a matter of fact, we do have this caterer who's been with us also for quite a while, and he wants to really help us out, and he has a mobile unit that he can bring actually to our parking lot of the building that we have the office, literally have the food and preparing it there, and people can drive through the front door, which is right on the side of the road here, the Lander Avenue, and they can just literally just pick up and go. We're planning to do some takeouts. Not yet, because, I mean, we're going to do the April 11th takeout also. But everything is so fresh and everything is so crazy right now that we decided just to shut down and not take any chances to, because obviously our volunteers, we're about 20 people, and we don't want to put anybody else in danger.
So I'll see if anybody would like to donate. In other words, if people are saying, well, I'd like to, you know, make a donation to the Bon Samaritano Foundation, how can they do that? So online, or how can they do that?
Well, they can contact us online, which is the Bon Samaritano, B-O-M, and then Samaritano. It's Samaritan, except with an O at the end, so it's Bon Samaritano. And they can call me. They can also write to us here in Hillmar. But on Facebook, on Bon Samaritano page, it has all of our contacts. And we do appreciate anything, because it has hit us very hard. And it's funny, because in situations like this, that's when we're even busier than ever, because again, the anxiety, the people being at home, the problems in the family, all of this just accumulates, and it makes it so much, I don't want to say harder, but it does make it a little bit harder on us, because I am very limited here.
Sure.
And we have to keep our doors open, in a sense. I mean, like right now, it's on the phone. I've been talking to people on the phone, but the phone starts at 7 in the morning, and sometimes it doesn't let out until midnight.
Wow.
But I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad I'm healthy, thank God, that I'm able to talk to them. It does get a little bit overwhelming. I do have to take care of myself, too. But, we still have to pay the rent, no matter what, for the building. We have to pay the electricity.
Sure.
So I'm, honestly, now more than ever, I hope that the Portuguese community and the committees do understand that this is to serve the community.
Correct.
And I know that many committees, they donate to a lot of places. And I just hope that they do consider us as one of the places for them to donate, because we're still tax deductible. We're still, we are a nonprofit organization registered in Sacramento. 501c. So I really hope that now more than ever our committees do understand and have compassion for what we're doing.
In the last few minutes that we have, I'll see there's you, Emily, and your brother did a 2.5 hour, just about 2.5 hour, let's call it a fun gig on Facebook, and I understand there's a possibility of that being repeated this weekend. So tell us in a couple minutes how that came about and how it turned out.
Well, Emily came with that idea a few weeks ago, and then being that we have the office closed, we decided to turn the big room, which is the room that we have our meetings, our group support meetings, we decided to turn that into a mini studio. I invited Lorraine Bittencourt, and I invited any artist that would want to come and do it, but they were not available. But Lorraine actually might come this Saturday, because we are planning on doing it this Saturday. Again, we did not announce it, but I think we're going to announce it probably today. We're planning to do another live one, probably a little bit more earlier. I'm trying for maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon here, so that we can catch more people from Portugal, mainland, and Azores. But it was fun. It was we call it doing a dance, except that people dance at home and we sing over here.
Fantastic.
It's safer.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Keep people enthused and bring back some memories, of course. I'll say this again. Thank you so much for all your work. Thank you for taking time to spend with us. And we'll, if you don't mind, we'll visit with you in the next couple of weeks to see how things are going, and keep our community informed of the good work that the Bom Samaritano Foundation is doing in Hillmar. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thank you for all your hard work, too. And you take care, and everybody be safe.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That was Alcides Machado, who is a director, president director of the Bom Samaritano Foundation, who is also an artist. Do check him out on Facebook for that live presentation on the weekend, and also do help out the Bom Samaritano Foundation and all the good work that they do with some of the most vulnerable and some people who have addictions in our community. We're about at the tail end of this edition, Justice, of the Portuguese American Hour.
Yep.
I think we need to talk a little bit about what's going on. Everyone knows the coronavirus, and so everything is affected. I wanted to give you a little bit of an update to our listeners about Portugal. People kind of look to us talk a little bit about what's going on in Portugal and the Portuguese speaking world. So Portugal's numbers, of course, unfortunately, have also risen. They were quite low for a while, but there wasn't a lot of testing done, as well as what's happening here. You know, testing is done, and then we know a little bit more reliable information. Right now in Portugal, and just consider that Portugal is a country of only 10 million people, so there are actually more people in the Los Angeles, Southern California area than the entire nation of Portugal. Mm-hmm. So 10 million people in a country of 10 million. There has been 2,362 cases detected. The concerning thing about it is that there's been over 300 in the last 48 hours, so quite a few of them. So over 10% of those detected were done within the last couple of days. We have had also 33 deaths, unfortunately, in Portugal. In the Azores, we are up to, I believe, 14 cases. No deaths. There was one report out by one of the Portuguese news sources, which was unfortunate. They reported a death, and that's not true. The government of the Azores has come out with that information, but it looks like there's also about 24 people that are being watched. There's a few hundred also, you know, under consideration. So it has also reached, it was originally started only in the island of Terceira. Now we have cases in Terceira, in São Jorge, in Pico, in São Miguel as well, and I believe one recently in Faial. So there's basically in five of the nine islands of the Azores. Most of the cases in the Azores have been of people that have traveled outside and have come back. So there are Azorians who have traveled to different parts. Four of them were from the island of São Jorge, were on a cruise to the Mediterranean area. A couple of them had traveled also to some other European countries as well. And so, so far, the cases have been folks who have traveled or those who have gotten it from those people who had traveled. So that's what we have so far. But what it was contained only for, as we mentioned here in the Portuguese American Hour, to just basically one island, the island of Terceira, there for about 4 or 5 days. Now it has spread to five different islands. And of course, here in the Portuguese American community, we want everyone to be safe like everyone else. So we're just about out of time. We thank you so much for being part of this edition of the Portuguese American Hour. We thank our guests, Alcides Machado and Tony Goulart. Of course, many thanks to, just as always, thanks to our Bela Aurora Music Group for being with us. And thank you all for being part of our daily ritual, 4 to 5 p.m. here on KGST AM 1600, the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. Thank you. Please stay safe. Please stay healthy. Take care of yourself. Stay home and take care of yourself and your family. We'll see you in the next edition.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.